On air. Online. On Twitter.
Jennifer Campbell is always on.
Unfiltered, opinionated, and ready to speak her mind at a moment's notice.
This is the Jennifer Campbell Show on 570 News and Rogers TV, Cable 20.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much. You try and change me, you can go to hell. 'Cause I don't wanna be nobody else. I like the chip I got in my front teeth. And I got bad tattoos you won't believe. So kick out the jams, kick up the soul. Pour another glass of that rock and roll. Turn up the band, find the hole. Gonna lose control tonight. What do you want?
Good morning. Friday is here. Polly, honestly, what goes? What is that farewell guy doing here? What is he doing here?
Like, what is with that headphone cord?
Come on. I mean, it looks like somebody had a really, you know, 50 Shades of Grey kind of party up in here. Not that there's anything wrong with that, as long as everybody said yes. Oh, I thought you should probably shouldn't. I mean, not at work. You know what I'm saying? Okay, Polly, and hello, people. I'm so glad you're here watching us on Rogers Television. Maybe you're not after I just did that little, you know, S&M joke right off the top. It's going to be a great day. We have lots to talk about. Lindsay Butcher is the executive director of the Shore Center. She will talk to us about, you've been hearing it on our newscast all morning, this open letter sent to the Waterloo Regional Police Services and to Chief Larkin, read the unfounded sexual assault rates here in Waterloo Region. We know from previous stories, the national unfounded average for all police services in terms of those stats is 19%. For Waterloo Regional Police, it was 27%. And does that tie into the culture? And because we know that the Waterloo Regional Police Service have a very large class action lawsuit against them now. We're going to talk to Lindsay Butcher about who sent the letter and why they sent that letter coming up at 9:45. We'll look back into the Wettlaufer case with attorney William McDowell. Now 17 groups will take part in an inquiry about how this happened. This nurse, Elizabeth Wettlaufer, who is serving life for killing 8 elderly long-term care residents in Ontario. That's on the way. Pile of fun. We got to lighten it up. We got to lighten it up a little bit, Polly. Polly, I was so excited to do, I was going to give you a little pop quiz this morning, and it involved candy.
I didn't study.
It's okay. Because my mind was a little blown this morning. Did you hear this morning? Despite their different colors, all Skittles are the same flavor.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
No, they're not.
Oh, I'm telling you, they are. They are all the same flavor. Most gummy candies, too. So are Fruit Loops.
No. Okay. No. I am an expert on the gummy candies. They do taste different.
Okay, Polly, I think what we're going to need to do is, and I went to our candy machine this morning in the lunchroom looking for Skittles. There's no Skittles in there.
No.
There's no Skittles. So we're going to have to gather some candy on the weekend. And what kind of candy you want to do with gummy bears?
Gummy bears.
Gummy bears?
Oh, never get tired of gummy bears.
Okay, so we're going to give you the quiz coming up on Monday. And so what's going to happen is we're going to line gummy bears up in front of you. You're going to get blindfolded. You're going to eat the gummy bear and tell us what color it is.
Let's do it.
You think you can do it?
Please.
He's a gummy bear expert, y'all. Okay, so they say that they all have the same flavor. You don't believe them?
No.
They do say that they have different fragrances in the shell.
So that would mean like you can smell
them?
They would smell different?
Yeah. So the orange is going to be orangey. And we know that smell and taste are directly, you know, correlated.
Right.
Oh, Polly, this is going to be super exciting.
All right, okay, I'm bringing gummy bears in on Monday. We're doing this.
You're going to get the gummy bears?
I can do it.
You do love gummy bears.
I'm probably going to buy some on the weekend anyway.
Okay, then. It's settled. We're doing the test. I really did want to do the Skittles test with you today, but like, and why, can I ask a question? Why does it say on the side of our snack machine in the kitchen, it raves about how healthy everything is in there? There's not one healthy thing inside the snack machine.
Yeah, it says like eat healthy, eat well, and then it's all junk food in there.
Chips,
all of
chocolate.
It.
I'm not complaining. Don't get me wrong.
Me neither.
I'm not complaining. I mean, who wants to get their quinoa and kale out of a vending machine? Nobody.
And it's funny though that the eat healthy, eat well machine.
Yeah.
Has junk food in it.
Let's just call a spade, okay? It's a crap-filled, sugar-laden, carb-laden, salty mess in there. And that's what people want. It's fine. Just don't try to, you know, what is that Dr. Phil saying? Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining?
I thought Judge Judy said that.
Is that Judge Judy?
I think so.
I'm mixing up my daytime TV people. All right. It is the Women's March coming up tomorrow. Every Saturday since January 21st, 2017, our first guest has marched for human and women's rights. That's amazing. She's done 49 of those, and coming up tomorrow, she has helped organize the one-year anniversary of the Women's March here in Kitchener-Waterloo. Always such a wonderful guest, and so happy to have Eden Hennessy joining us again this morning. Good morning to you, Eden.
Good morning, and I have to say I'm shocked about that Skittle announcement.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Women's March, human rights, yes, but what's with the candy?
Sometimes we have to, you know, lighten it up a bit, and what is with the candy? So we're doing it on, well, I hope you tune in on Monday to find out whether or not Polly's as, you know, as skilled as he says he is at Gummy Bear.
Well, you know, the blind testing, as a researcher, I was impressed that that was your plan. I'm like, yes, just
take
your data, you know. Take as many measurements as you can. You're going
to
need them.
Legally, do I have to tell him I'm going to soak some of them in vodka and then feed those to him too? Do you think I should probably disclose
that?
What you
can do is just tell him that he'll be fully debriefed about the true purpose of the study when it concludes.
Okay. It's never lost on me, Eden, that you share your name with the original, the first rebel, the first woman rebel. The one who wouldn't be told what to do. I kind of love that about you. But you've marched every single Saturday for an entire year. Talk about some of those marches and where you went.
Well, I wasn't alone. I was with my sister, Skye, and a good friend of mine and colleague and bandmate, actually, named Bianca. And so the three of us were really the core folks. And then we had other people join us throughout the year for different marches. So we marched originally. I came home from the Women's March in San Antonio, Texas, energized and just ready to roll. Like I was like, we need to keep this momentum going. And what is it actually like to do something activist every week of the year? What is the community? How does the community respond? Are there different responses to different issues? And so we did women in science marches. We did clean water marches, clean air marches, environmental justice, trans rights marches. So we really tried to represent a bunch of different social issues to the best of our abilities. And have to say, this community, super. Positive reception. Everyone was very friendly, and we got to engage in some conversations with people that we might not talk to in our regular lives. And we're sitting at our desks at our jobs, and so this was really educational for me to get out there and talk to different folks and you know, make different connections with community groups. And so it feels like a real culmination of this tomorrow morning is having a bunch of people there with you. It's just going to be a really, really powerful experience. So I'm really excited.
So after you did San Antonio's march last year, right away, did you get yourself involved with, you know, being part of the march locally?
Well, I mean, I think I'm connected through work and other initiatives to women in the community. And so Sarah Bingham was actually the person who reached out to me when we were at a local event that was going on for women in science and tech and got me involved. So shout out to Sarah for that. And so it wasn't until, you know, a little bit into the year, actually, that I got more involved with Women's March Canada. I was really just standing out there with, you know, my sister and I, and we're beating our drum and walking along and standing on Speaker's Corner right on King Street. And so it was it's been very grassroots for us, certainly. And then joining up with this larger group who also shares that grassroots goal of having a overarching goal, of course, inclusivity and all human rights. Mm-hmm. and that is really the central focus of this. Is it's not an anti-Trump protest. It's not excluding any particular, you know, any group. Everyone is welcome to join in and be a part of this conversation that as we move forward as a society that is fair and equitable for as many people as possible, and it should be everyone.
Is so we know that, you know, the scale of the march was, you know, worldwide and so far reaching.
Five million people last year. Can you believe that?
Unbelievable. What's the expectation then for this year? Will it be as far reaching? Will it be as or perhaps can we have high hopes that it'll be more than 5 million people worldwide?
I'd love to hope that it will be even more. Of course, you can help us by RSVPing to Women's March Canada. So we're trying to get a grasp of how many people are showing up in different across the world in different nations, but also within Canada. So many, many different cities and provinces have their own chapters. And so we want to get people tuned into those local chapters so we can get a sense of how many people we're expecting. But also, as a data-driven researcher myself, I'm really interested in seeing, you know, this is evidence of how important these issues are to how many people. So we need to be able to back up saying these issues are a huge concern with the numbers.
It was so wonderful as the days unfolded after the march last year to see, I remember one tiny little community in Nova Scotia where I think it was just one woman marching with her sign down these rural roads. And it just felt so good to know that this was, you know, all reaching and that, you know, everybody had a vested interest in the message.
I mean, folks in Antarctica, right? Like huddled around one little sign and there's five of them, but that is the spirit of this, of the Women's March, is that it is about getting out there, showing your support for all marginalized and oppressed people, and saying that you will use your voice to join the chorus of voices, because, you know, one person, you make a little bit of ruckus, but a bunch of us, now that's a choir, and that becomes harder to ignore. So it's really about joining the larger group of folks and saying, you know, we stand here together today.
You know, and I was, as the Me Too movement unfolded, I think it was October that we all started to kind of, you know, be inspired and invigorated by that. I was, because it felt, there were many moments this year where everything felt pretty damn hopeless and that we weren't making any momentum, or that perhaps we were just kind of alarmed and surprised by the amount of work that we still had to do. And how, when that movement was, you know, spreading like wildfire so quickly over the past, you know, 4 months, that was a great invigoration as well, to realize, you know, when we are united and when we come together, we really, really can make stuff happen.
Right. And as far as, you know, seeing the horrible, right. And as you said, you know, many times feeling hopeless or feeling like things just couldn't get worse, opening up the paper every day. Mm-hmm. Well, that also creates an opportunity for change, right? We cannot change what we won't see, what we won't recognize, and if we don't acknowledge these problems first, then we're never going to move forward and actually have progress, right? So it's, you got to look at it, and that's, you know, quoting Leonard Cohen, it's when things break that you see light come through the cracks, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I think about this sort of movement. Is yes, it's painful. Yes, it's difficult for all of us, but at the same time, that's where change starts. So, you know, we're here together. We provide support for each other. And I think it's a necessary time. As the movement says, time's up.
Eden Hennessy is our guest. She'll be marching in Kitchener-Waterloo tomorrow with the Women's March. So where do we go? How do we join? What do we need to do? What do we bring?
Well, the first thing you want to do is RSVP to Women's March Canada or our Facebook group. So Women's March Canada, Kitchener-Waterloo Region has a page as well. So let us know that you're coming. Everyone is welcome. So we are, anyone who wants to march for a particular human rights cause that they feel is central to them, feel free. Bring a sign. We ask that all signs be respectful and positive, but you are welcome to advocate for immigration, for healthcare, for women's rights, human rights, trans rights, feel free, bring it out. We want to hear your voices. We want to hear about what this community wants represented. So we're starting at City Hall in Kitchener at Open Sesame, and they're going to be giving out free drinks and snacks in the morning. And then we're starting the ceremony about 10, and then we're going to be actually doing the walk from 10:40 to 11:40, and so that's happening. We're walking from City Hall to the Kitchener Market and back. And then we're having wonderful guest speakers and musicians, Janis Joleen and Alicia Brilla and Catherine Fife will be speaking. So we're having a closing ceremony of sorts, and we're wrapping it all up around 1 p.m. So we have a kids rest area, sign making station. So we have a lot going on, and it's really, there's something there for everybody.
Eden Hennessy, always such an advocate and a beautiful, strong voice, and I love talking to you. I'm in Toronto this weekend, so I won't see you at this march, but I in between
you'll be there.
In between hockey games, I'm going to drag one of or all three of my boys over to the women's march so we
That's
can participate
awesome.
In that too. Our signs.
I look forward to seeing a photo or a selfie of you.
Our signs will probably be attached to hockey sticks. Is that threatening?
That's
maybe
cool.
maybe we shouldn't do that. Eden, enjoy tomorrow, and thanks for all you do.
Oh, thank you so much, Jennifer. Take care.
Thank you. Goodbye. Okay, so there you have it. Women's March KW is what you search on Facebook if you'd like to participate locally. And as Eden mentioned, and as we know, these marches are very widespread. So wherever you happen to find yourself this weekend, perhaps you can march along. For those who are marginalized. And this is going to connect people right here in Waterloo Region. All men welcome, too. Come on, good guys. Don't not all men us now. It's 9:21, and we are going to get into the pile of fun. Polly, you want to find out, are you happy at work, Polly? That's on the spot, isn't it? You
yeah,
happy?
Of
you happy
I
at
am.
Work? Okay, well, then maybe we won't do that one. do not stifle a sneeze. Did you hear this story? Dude stifled a sneeze, and it got bad, like really bad. Do you ever swallow the sneezes to try to be polite or to try?
Sometimes,
don't do it.
If I don't want to make a scene.
We're not, you can't do it anymore. I'm going to tell you why coming up after the break. And, Skittles are off the table. Oh, also 75% of us are living in fear of this. It's not snakes. It's not spiders. It's not the tangerine toddler. We'll tell you what it is coming up after the break.
News travels quickly, but 570 News breaking news alerts travel even faster. Get the biggest stories sent right to your mobile device. Brought to you by Libro Credit Union. Own your life. Sign up today and get breaking news alerts from 570news.com.
Everybody is terrified of this. You want to guess, Paul? You know what? I thought it was a little silly, and then I realized that just this week I was terrified of this. Maybe not terrified, but I...
Missing your alarm clock?
Well, kind of.
Really?
I think this fits into it because 50% of us admit that we are afraid of our cell phone running out of batteries. Which I guess would mean because that's part of it. You'd miss your alarm. Does anybody have an alarm clock anymore? Do you have an alarm clock or just your phone?
I do, but I don't have it set.
Okay. So half of us said, we are afraid of running out of juice or gas. That's what my youngest says. Mommy, my iPad's out of gas. It's out of gas. It definitely got to plug it in. Give it some more gas. 25% of us say we suffer from daily anxiety about our battery. Every single day we're worried about the battery. And I thought, "Oh, this is ridiculous. I've got all high and mighty about it for a couple minutes, and then I realized, remember on Tuesday how we went to Toronto to the mothership for a meeting?
Yeah.
I brought my charger in my purse. Normally I don't do that. Like normally I can make it through a day before I need to charge my phone. And I brought my charger in my purse because I thought, well, we'll be sitting on the bus for a while, probably using our phones more.
I figured the same thing. Yeah.
And then when I got on the bus and I looked down close to my feet, did you notice there was an electrical outlet there?
Yeah, I did notice that. Yeah.
So I plugged that sucker in and I just surfed away with not a care in the world. And I realized when I saw that little outlet, I got a bit of a buzz because I knew No problem. I'm not going to run out of juice. So I am. I must be in the sad survey here. I'm in the sad survey. Yeah. Okay, did you hear about this? This guy who stifled his sneeze? This is a crazy story. I think probably most of us have done that. Like, Paul, you admitted, maybe it's a movie, maybe it's church, maybe it's somewhere that you cannot just let it go. This guy held in his sneeze and then ended up spending 7 days in the hospital and being fed through a tube and on antibiotics because he ruptured his throat. The doctors say that this damage is rare, but absolutely this is possible if you try to block a sneeze. When you sneeze, air comes out of you at 150 miles per hour.
Yeah, that's like hurricane speed. I've heard that.
It's faster than any baseball can be thrown.
I know.
So you could, if you retain all that pressure, it could do a lot of damage. So just let the sneeze out. Don't screw being polite, Polly.
But what if I'm in the radio studio and I'm talking to you and, you know, you don't want to hear that in the background.
Turn the mic off and give me a hand signal. I'll cover for you. And I'm going to need the same in return. We are going to take a break and get to news next at 9:30 in just a minute. And then we will talk about this Wettlaufer killing inquiry. There will be 17 groups taking part in the inquiry. A surviving victim, some relatives of the murdered seniors, advocacy and healthcare groups. We'll talk to one of the lawyers representing this inquiry. William C. McDowell is our guest coming up next. And then Lindsay Butcher, who's the executive director at the Shore Center, will get some more information about that letter sent to Waterloo Regional Police Services from Lindsay and some other organizations in our city about their concern with what is happening with the unfounded rates here in Waterloo Region and the class action suit against the police service. We have news next at 9:30. This is the Jennifer Campbell Show, 570 News.
You can watch dash cam videos from Russia all day or put some actual news in your news feed. Click on 570news.com or go to your app store and download the 570 News app.
Thanks for coming back with us on Rogers Television and on 570 News. Happy Friday morning to you. Lots of sunshine happening outside those windows right now. In August, after Elizabeth Wettlaufer was convicted of 8 counts of first-degree murder, 4 counts of attempted murder, and 2 counts of aggravated assault, the Ontario government set up the Long-Term Care Homes Public Inquiry. And a surviving victim, relatives of murdered seniors, and advocacy and healthcare groups are among 17 groups and entities granted permission to take part in a public inquiry sparked by this case. Joining us to talk more about that this morning is William C. McDowell, who is a partner at Lensler Slot. And we say good morning to you, sir. Thanks for coming on with us.
Happy to be here.
Okay, so let's talk about this. What the point, I suppose, is here when it comes to these inquiries, these public inquiries, because obviously we know that Elizabeth Wettlaufer is serving life in prison and probably is not going to spend any of her remaining years on this earth outside of the bars. So, what is the inquiry for, and how does it serve the survivors of this tragic crime?
Well, I can remember where I was when I heard this story about Elizabeth Wettlaufer having been charged with 8 murders and 4 attempted murders. And, you know, my late mother was a nurse, and I was absolutely shocked to hear this news, as I think everybody was, particularly in southwestern Ontario. So she cooperated with the police. She entered pleas of guilty, and as you say, it's likely that she will spend the rest of her natural life in prison. But there was then the next wave of collective thinking, which was, how on earth could this have happened? And how is it that you have this highly regulated industry of long-term care homes and a highly regulated profession of nursing, and how is it that somehow she was able to commit these awful, awful crimes? So the government put together a commission of inquiry, which in its terms of reference said, first of all, tell us, going into the past, what happened, what were the circumstances that allowed this to happen, which is something a bit different and broader than the police inquiry. And then the forward-looking part is what policy changes, what legislative changes might be recommended to ensure that this doesn't happen again. So that's the point of the inquiry. I know that's a long-winded answer, but that's really what we're about.
So are you representing then these the folks that will participate in from the 17 different groups in the inquiry?
No, I'm the lead lawyer on the commission counsel team. So the way it works is the government passes an order in council saying this is what the inquiry is about. These are its terms of reference. It assigns a judge, or I guess technically it asks the Chief Justice of Ontario to provide a judge. The Chief Justice asked Justice Eileen Galise of the Court of Appeal for Ontario to be the judge. The judge then selects a lead counsel, that was me, and then we fill out our team. So we now have six or seven lawyers working with us, four principal lawyers, and we represent the commissioner. Our job is to call most of the evidence, and then the participants have their own lawyers. So there are, I think, three groups of family members and survivors. Each of them has a team of lawyers. We put the evidence on stage to show what we think the chief themes of the inquiry are, and they supplement. They can try and pick apart the evidence that we've put up. I think more often the position will be, let me ask a few more questions, and I've got another witness who may actually shed some light on this.
So, survivors, some of the victims' family members, there are close friends. So they're organized into three separate groups. So what are the three separate groups?
Well, I don't want to go into too much naming names, but there are a couple of groups of survivors of two of the victims who died. They have made common cause and selected a lawyer who will represent them to ask questions. There's another family group which is joined with yet another family group, so another two groups of survivors. They've got their same lawyer. And then there are other groups. So, for example, the College of Nurses of Ontario has got a keen interest in this, and they're there, and they're going to participate. The Ontario Nurses Association is going to participate. The association representing long-term residents of these homes, they're going to participate.
So when we talk about witnesses, so these all groups have the right to call and question witnesses. Is that right?
That's correct.
And when we start to think about who might be on that list of witnesses, who can we expect to hear from?
Well, there will be some witnesses who are from the homes where these events happened. There will be some witnesses from the Ministry of Health, for example, who conducts inspections in the homes. There will be some experts, you know, people who talk about how it is you decide what staffing levels are appropriate. I mean, it's a pretty broad array of, mm-hmm. of areas where the evidence might be called. There'll probably be some evidence about the financial aspects of this. You know, how does the revenue work for these homes? How are the budgets assigned? How do we decide collectively how much money is allocated per patient or per resident of these homes? And very complex areas.
Yeah, and very complex because I'm sure in a group this large, when it comes to an inquiry of this size, everybody probably has different lead concerns and different things that they would like to see as outcomes after an inquiry like this takes place. Everybody's got a vested interest in seeing some change, but I'm sure different folks have different questions they want answered and issues they want examined and changes that they want implemented.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid observation. So if you take something like the Elliott Lake Mall collapse, you say, well, there's something where everyone surely is on the same page. But still, you know, you have the inquiry in Elliott Lake, and there are different points of view. There are different perspectives. And that has happened in certainly every inquiry I've been involved in, and many of the other big ones as well.
How long will the inquiry will it take on a timeline way? Is there any way to kind of know when it's of this size, or is this an average size when it comes to an inquiry? Are there probably ones bigger and smaller? Is there a timeline to know when we'll have some results?
Well, we have to report by, I believe it's August 1st, 2019, so we know that that's a hard stop. We are putting in a lot of the evidence through overview reports, so we will collect the results of our investigation and put them together with an overview statement and attached documents to say, here's what we think the evidence is that should be called, for example, with respect to the College of Nurses of Ontario. That will then be distributed for comment, and we will then decide together with counsel for the other parties, here's what live evidence we have to have on top of the evidence that's been put in by way of overview report. So that will shorten the amount of live evidence we would have. We think we will have 6 to 8 weeks of hearings in the summer, beginning early in June and then going into July, then taking a break for a few weeks, and then some further evidence in July and a bit less evidence in August. So that gives you some idea. We'll probably have some spillover evidence in September, and then we will break, and then we will go into the second phase, which is the phase which will involve more the policy review and getting expert evidence and so on.
Some of the entities will get government funding for the legal costs. Is that right?
Well, we can't decide that. We can make recommendations, but with respect to several of the entities, yes, we have recommended that they receive funding.
So, and then we can only hope and assume then that after the inquiry is complete, that the government, I mean, because they set up the inquiry so that they'll be receptive, the government of Ontario, to, you know, obviously suggestions and ideas and movement on how we prevent something like this from happening again, for some new ideas, for some new checkpoints, for some new standards.
I expect that they will. I mean, certainly there have been inquiries in the past where the report is issued and whoever the government of the day is says, these are excellent recommendations, we'll get right to them, and that doesn't happen. I don't think that's the case here, because when we did our meetings in the community, so in Woodstock and in London, we didn't know how many people were going to show up, but the meetings were packed. And when we went on to London, the meetings were packed, two a day. And I remember saying to my colleagues, you know, I bet that you could have a meeting like that every night for the next year in a different part of Ontario, and they would all be packed, because people are so concerned about the care being provided to their elderly relatives and friends in these facilities. So there will be a lot of focus in the media and otherwise, and social media, when our report is delivered. And I think the pressure on whoever the government happens to be after the election will be such that the government will really have to look at our recommendations and implement many of them, and at the very least engage with whether some of them they view to be impractical or too expensive or whatever. But I think there'll be a lot of public pressure to implement them.
Mm-hmm. William McDowell, partner from Lenser I cannot do it.
Lensner Slatt.
Thank you so much. I think I got it off the top. It's the end.
Well, you know, it's a great firm, but it's a difficult name.
Yeah, it is a difficult name. Thank you for the assistance with that, and thanks so much for your time this morning. We appreciate it so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Take good care. Bye-bye. Okay, we are... Oh, I had a listener letter, too, that I wanted to read. Remember that discussion we had about... I hope I can get to this one, because it was a good one. Where did it come from? Where did it come from? Where did it go? We did talk about the principles yesterday, And then I had a great email from somebody about, from Tim. Tim sent a really great email about the discussion we had about Friends and it being homophobic and transphobic and all those kind of things. So I hope we can get to that too. But coming up after the break, we will speak to Lindsay Butcher, Executive Director of the Shore Center. There's been an open letter sent to the Waterloo Region Police Services and Chief Larkin. The unfounded sexual assault rates being much higher here in Waterloo Region than they are elsewhere provincially. The ongoing case against the Waterloo Regional Police, the class action lawsuit against the service. Are those two things connected? How could they not be? That's next on 570 News.
The power, the energy from a crowd. It's unmistakable. The ones who feel it the most. The Kitchener Rangers.
Busting down the middle. He scores! Up and out!
The Kitchener Rangers play here. 570 News.
In June of 2017... current and some former Waterloo Regional Police officers spearheaded a $165 million class action lawsuit against the Waterloo Regional Police Service over gender discrimination, sexual harassment, and sexual assault. Just this past week, we had some new accounts, three new affidavits filed in that class action suit. The lawyer for the Waterloo Regional Police Services called them exaggerated. We then see this letter this morning from the five members of the Sexual Violence Task Force. The Sexual Violence Task Force was created by Chief Larkin of the Waterloo Regional Police Service to address high, unfounded rates of sexual assaults. You remember this story was earlier before the lawsuit came out. So unfounded is a police reporting a classification, meaning that a crime never occurred and was not attempted. And we learned last year that from 2010 to 2014, the Canadian national unfounded average for police services was 19%, while we here in Waterloo Region were significantly higher at 27%. That was from the Globe and Mail. The Sexual Violence Task Force is conducting a historical review of unfounded cases, as well as creating a template for ongoing community-based advocate review of sexual assault cases in Waterloo Region. That task force includes Sarah Castleman, the executive director from the Sexual Assault Support Center of Waterloo Region. She'll be talking to Farwell coming on later today. Elizabeth Clark, who's the CEO of the YW Kitchener-Waterloo, Kim Decker, Executive Director of the YWCA of Cambridge, and Judah Udchorn, volunteer with the Male Allies Program of the Sexual Assault Support Center of Waterloo Region. Also, Lindsay Butcher, who joins us now. She is the Executive Director of Shore Center and Co-Chair of the Sex Workers Action Network. Lindsay, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So how hard was it then as a task force that was, you know, created by our chief of police to pen this letter to him? And actually, I suppose I should probably read that letter out loud first before we get into the logistics of how you came to decide together that you would do that. So quickly, dear Chief Larkin, we write with you with respect, kindness, and concern. We're deeply troubled by how the Waterloo Regional Police Service has chosen to publicly respond to the recent class action lawsuit against the service. When the lawyer retained by the WRPS went out of his way to challenge allegations outside of court, we became very concerned about how his message on behalf of the Waterloo Region Police Service services would be understood by our community. Then when you felt compelled to defend your staff in the media and cited progress on gender equity without naming gender disparity as a very real issue within policing, our worries increased. Messages such as these can have far-reaching negative impacts on women and girls, particularly survivors of gender-based discrimination, sexual harassment, and sexual violence. As you know, survivors already struggle to come forward, to be believed, to find safe spaces for healing and justice. These responses diminished the work of the Sexual Violence Task Force, indicating a lack of understanding or acknowledgement, or maybe even a rejection of a connection between gender disparities and harms in policing and how effectively police respond to survivors of sexual violence. We want to be clear. We believe survivors. We want our community to understand the important work of the Sexual Violence Task Force cannot be separated from the work of creating gender equity, justice in policing, or the need for equitable, healthy relationships between all genders in Waterloo Region. Acknowledging gender bias is fundamental to improving police culture and creating better outcomes for survivors who choose to report to police. Our hope would be to continue to move forward with the critically important work of the Sexual Violence Task Force. Together with you, we are committed to improving police responses to survivors of sexual violence and to ending gender-based violence in all its forms. We look forward to further dialogue. And then, of course, it is signed by Sarah Castleman, Elizabeth Clark, Kim Decker, Judah Udshorn, and you, Lindsay Butcher. So thank you for giving me the chance to make sure we had all of that on the air.
Yes, thank you for reading it.
So, I mean, I think it's a natural conclusion to draw that, you know, in a police force prior to this lawsuit being launched, that we learned, you know, that our unfounded sexual assault rates were significantly higher than the national average. I think it's a logical connection to make that in a police force that's not believing it's there, that aren't believing the survivors and victims in the community, that they're certainly not believing the victims within their own organization.
Yeah, and that's what troubles us, is that, you know, they have come out so strong against their own members, women who have served our communities in some cases for decades as police officers. The aggressive tone in which they've responded to their complaints of sexual harassment and ongoing gender bias throughout their careers, it really gives us pause and to understand and to think about, you know, what chance do women in the community, especially marginalized women, have in making reports to the police about their own experiences of sexual violence?
Absolutely. I mean, if you know, that is a kind of permeating attitude. And again, I mean, the two are absolutely connected. When this when the unfounded sexual assault rates came out, Chief Larkin came to you and other members of our community and asked for this task force to be created to investigate that, the high rate of unfounded classifications. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
So, and how did those, did you feel good about that? That obviously, you know, that the chief was recognizing that there was an issue and quickly, you know, gathering people, experts in this community to deal with it. Did that, I mean, I can only imagine that was, you know, encouraging.
Yeah, I was very encouraged with the progress that we've had as a task force. We've been very active. We met as early as last week or as recent as last week to move forward on developing a new process for victim advocate review of unfounded cases of sexual violence. So the task force is still active and is still moving forward, but we felt it was time, based on everything that has come out in the media from the Waterloo Regional Police, particularly Mr. Bennett, the lawyer for the police services, comments. It was time for us to take a stand as members of the task force. The task force is quite large. I think there's over 40 members.
Mm-hmm.
But for those of us who consider themselves to be advocates in the community, it was important for us to stand up and to say, you know, it's unacceptable the way that the police has responded to this, and that we do stand with survivors, and we do believe survivors that have come forward from the police services to file these affidavits.
Had the response from the police been, you know, something in a different tone, in a different use of words, you know, we take this seriously. We are going to do everything we can to, you know, find the truth, find the accused, listen to the survivors. If that tone had been different, would you be more encouraged?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would have been much more encouraged.
Yeah.
I've been very, you know, encouraged throughout this process. You know, we've had really very productive meetings as a task force and as subcommittees. We've been very active, and it's been a really encouraging process. And then for this to come out in the last week or so, it's really been very disappointing and troubling, because it feels like, you know, we did have this momentum and
yeah,
we were moving forward, and then I feel this is a real step back.
Is there anybody on the task force who, I mean, feels like, you know, this is the Chief Larkin and the Waterloo Regional Police Services are responding because this is the way the lawyers are telling them to respond?
I'm not sure. Like, we haven't discussed it as a full task force. The full task force hasn't met in a few months just because the subcommittees are working in between the meetings, and then we'll be reporting back to the larger task force. So I'm not sure if that's how some members feel. I can really only speak on behalf of sort of the group of us who penned the letter, that we really feel that, you know, the lawyer works for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And they represent your interest. And so the fact that these comments were allowed to go out, and then the subsequent comments that Chief Larkin had defending members of the police, was equally troubling.
So we wait then for response from Chief Larkin now.
Yeah, and, you know, we have a very professional relationship with Chief Larkin. He's been very open to dialogue and to addressing our concerns as advocates in the community, and so I'm very hopeful that he will respond appropriately, and I imagine that will come, you know, very shortly.
All right, Lindsay Butcher, Shore Center, thank you so much. Again, it's always so great to have you. We'll be watching and listening and following along.
All right, thanks so much.
Take good care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Farwell is on his way in. I am on my way out. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks, producer Polly. And thank you, producer James. And thank you so much for listening to 570 News.